Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
Today on the 10 Adventures podcast, I'm excited to be talking with Jens Klitte Mogensen, who recently completed an epic 4,800-kilometer bike tour around Northern Europe, from his home in Denmark down to the Mediterranean and back. Welcome, Jens.
Hello.
First off, congratulations on what sounded like an epic, epic bike tour. Let's start this off. What was your route?
My route was not very planned at all. I first started in my hometown in a small village in Denmark, and then I went up to Copenhagen to visit some friends, and then down Sjælland to Nykøbing Falster, where I took a ferry to Germany. That's where I felt the trip really set off. And then I went up Germany, up all the way to München, and then into the Alps and into Italy from there, just back into the Alps because it was so great. But I didn't plan much of it. I just had to like go and do it before I feel like I could really get a sense of what was ahead. Because I don't know, I took it one day at a time because I never knew if I was going to quit. Then I said, okay, then I'm just going to take a bus back. So it was one day at a time, and I had so many cool moments everywhere. Each country, amazing people, amazing, you know, nature experiences out in the mountains and forests and whatnot.
So when you were starting this, did you even have an idea, I want to ride to the Mediterranean, or you just said, hey, I've got a few months, I'm just going to ride and every day kind of decide where I go? And, you know, you could have ended up in Spain, or you could have ended up in the Ukraine, or, you know, you really had no idea where, you know, where your end destination was.
I had an idea of really wanting to, you know, see Italy, because I felt like it would be a major shift in, you know, just the culture and just riding around Italy. It would be very different from Germany and Denmark and France, and it's just a very different culture. So I really wanted to go up to Venice because I've always wanted to see that. But I didn't expect going all the way up there. I don't know if I did, but I just set out and took it one day at a time. Like I said, I didn't expect anything, really. I was ready to go back if I felt like I didn't want to do it anymore. It wasn't like, I didn't want it to be like a survival trip where if I hated it, then I was just going to keep going. I felt like it was always cool and I always learned something.
With this like approach to, you know, not knowing each day, how did you handle accommodations? I know you wild camped a bit, but were you mostly wild camping to, you know, have this kind of flexibility that you didn't have to make reservations in a hostel or a hotel?
Yeah, I slept in a hotel in Paris and a hostel in Amsterdam, but that was, yeah, the only hostels and hotels. But yeah, I was on camping sites like one every 4 days. The rest, mostly I wild camped. It depended a lot if I, you know, how much energy I had. There were days when I'd stay in a campsite for 2 days just because I was beat up and I needed to lay down and watch movies all day.
And I know the feeling how great that can be, just like taking a rest day and doing nothing. Wild camping is something that isn't that well known here in North America. I know a lot of cycle tours in Europe do it. Can you just describe, you know, how do you wild camp? What do you have to be aware of? What does that actually mean on your bike trip?
Well, most places in Europe, I don't know Northern America, but most places in Europe, it's not allowed to, you know, camp in nature. It's a bit of a gray area with the law, but wild camping is just putting up your tent somewhere in the wild. And yeah, it's illegal, but, you know, as long as you treat the nature or just general surroundings of where you are, leave it without a trace, be respectful of the area, then, you know, I don't think anyone's going to have a problem with it. unless they, of course, find you. Maybe, I don't know.
So that was one of my questions. So in your case, would you kind of ride after dinner, you know, so you're camping closer to dark and, you know, you kind of ride and then start looking for a place? Or would you set up kind of before dinner and just, you know, find a place that's really isolated, you know, away from the road in the woods?
I looked for places right around five most days, pretty early. But that's when I felt like, you know, I started. It's totally subconscious, but yeah, my brain just starts getting anxious about, you know, it's getting later and I need to find a place to sleep. So that's about when I start looking, and I just scour everything where I ride, and sometimes I find a good place and, you know, I check it out, and then if I feel comfortable with it, I put up my tent. Some days, you know, if it's a really good place, I don't mind putting it up at 6 or 7, because it's most days it's around nightfall though. But if I feel like no one's gonna see me, then I do it earlier. If I don't like it, then I'm gonna put it up late.
So when you start out in the morning, do you have an idea where you're gonna stop, or does it just all of a sudden around 4 or 5 o'clock you just start looking for a place and there's kind of no planning in advance? It's just, hey, it's time to stop, I'm gonna stop the next good place I see.
I don't plan it. I just go if I want to see a city. Usually that's when I stop early, because if I've done maybe 60 in a day and I'm outside of a city I want to see, but it's evening, then I don't just want to rush through it. Then I'll put up my tent outside the city, even though I've only done 60. And then I'll wake up early, because then I have the whole day. Then I don't have to rush, because arriving in like a city at evening, it's just too stressful. I was in München around evening. It was really exciting, but I had to get out because it was getting late, and I don't have the budget for sleeping in hotels. So I got out, and then I just, it's a big city, so you really underestimate how long it takes to get out of them.
Yeah, I know, exactly. You can spend like an hour around, I'm just trying to get out of the damn city, and then there's like the suburbs and whatnot. When you're in a city, what do you do with your bike and your gear? You know, if you want to go into a city you want to explore for a few hours, do you leave your panniers on your bike? Do you carry them? Do you lock your bike up, or how do you handle that?
Usually if I'm in a city, I'm just riding my bicycle around, looking at things. I was in Amsterdam and Paris. Like, I had a hostel room and a hotel room, but that was because I felt like the other cities I rushed, and I felt like that was around the end of my trip, and I felt like I rushed a lot of the places. So I figured, okay, I'm gonna spend a little bit of money on a hotel, and then I can walk around and eat and go into stores, and that was really nice. And definitely on my next trip, I'll have that in mind.
You referred earlier to doing, you know, on a short day, 60 kilometers. You know, I know you didn't have a planning state, but what would your average kilometers a day be?
I usually did 100, sometimes more. You know, it changed. In the beginning, I do like 60 or 80, but right around when I got to across the Alps, it was just 100 plus a day usually.
And so when you did this, were you entirely solo the entire trip?
No, I met people along the way. In my first day in Germany on the ferry, I met a Swedish girl I rode with for a day, and then we had to go separate ways, but that was really fun. And then in Italy, I rode with a guy called Samuel, an Italian, also 23 like me, for 3 days from right about Venice to Mantua. And that was also really cool. He knew so much about most of the places since he'd grown up there. So it's really nice having like a kind of a personal tour guide friend kind of. And the guy I rode the longest with was in Holland, also met on a ferry. And a guy called Peter, an Austrian. And he was really interesting. I rode with him for about a week. And yeah, he had ridden for 3.5 years, most of the globe, like 4 continents, I think he said. And I just plucked his brain the whole time, just being fascinated by like that adventure.
So he was doing an around the world or like a massive 3.5 year trip, and you just stumbled upon him on a ferry?
Yeah, he wasn't on his 3.5 years trip. He'd finished that 3 years ago. He was on a smaller trip, which he'd struggled to find time for. But now he was finally on the road, and it was really nice to share that reunion for him, kind of with cycling again, cycle touring.
Yeah, I know. I can imagine how interesting that would be. But for a lot of this trip, you were on your own. And so was that hard, you know, when you weren't with other people, just, you know, cycling on your own all day, going in, setting up your tent at night alone? Or are you pretty comfortable, you know, spending time on your own?
I felt like before I left, I was really comfortable. But there were times when I felt really lonely, especially in the beginning of the trip. It was there were some tough days where, you know, you lay there alone in your tent, some weird place, and you just feel like, what am I doing here? What's going on? So yeah, there were definitely times when I felt like I was going a bit crazy, but it got better as I, you know, the trip got on. After about a month, it was better. But yeah, most of the issues I faced, I felt like with time just got easier, because you got used to all of it.
You know, I've done a lot of my big trips solo as well, simply because trying to find other people that wanted to go take a few months off, it's actually really tough. And, you know, it is. It's true. You know, the hard part is, if something goes wrong, there's no one to help you. You're always like, how do I get out of this? But at the same time, I think you learn a lot about yourself and resilience and ability to, you know, to get out of kind of sticky situations. So going into this trip, had you done a lot of bike touring before, or was this kind of your first big trip?
I'd done a trip in 2019, which lasted for about 3 days, just in Denmark. Going to Møn, a small island. I used to go to school there, and then I saw some friends. But that was a smaller trip. This was definitely a big step from that.
So going into this, were you a little bit concerned? Hey, I've only done a 3-day trip. I'm going to go do like a 90-day trip. Did you have any worries about just how big this was? Or was it just your kind of approach, I can turn back anytime, I can stop? So it wasn't a 90-day trip for you. It was just a day-to-day trip.
Well, I never expected it to be 90 days. Like, I told myself, okay, if this is too much for me, then I'm going to go home. That's fine. Like I said, I just got comfortable in it.
So you've been off your bike for 2 weeks. Does it feel different not riding every day? Do you miss it? Are you happy just to have, you know, a comfy bed and abundant food and not having to be on the bike all the time now?
I don't know. It's actually pretty weird, because coming home from the trip, I don't know. I have read lots of people struggling with getting back. I don't know if it's because this is a shorter trip than those people that go for years, but I don't know. I feel like I got pretty easily back into the rhythm. But yeah, I miss it, surely. I ride my bike a lot more than when I left. Most days, yeah, most days I ride my bike. I didn't used to do that before. Because I'm not like a cyclist kind of guy. I just like the, you know, the tempo of riding your bike. It's
I totally know that feeling of, it's just nice. You all of a sudden realize, hey, I've been riding for 4 hours. I've just, you know, you get captivated with just kind of the repetitive movement. I always think it's a little bit like meditation. You just kind of get into a zone and you feel like, hey, I feel great for doing a long ride. You saw a ton of Europe. You saw, you know, kind of Northern Europe. You saw the Alps. You saw the Mediterranean. Are there a couple moments that were real highlights where you think back and say, oh my, I can't believe I did this or I saw that?
Just standing there in Italy with your bicycle, it's just a crazy feeling. It's nothing quite like that. Just really a very extraordinary thing, I guess.
Were you just like really proud of yourself, or were you kind of just surprised that, hey, I actually did it? What was that feeling for you?
Yeah, I guess I was kind of proud of myself in a way. It was something I've always wanted. I've thought about this this long trip for a long time. I worked for 2.5 years just thinking, okay, when I'm done here, then I'll have money. Then I can just take some time and ride my bike. It's been on my mind for a long time. So, yeah, there were definitely times on my trip when I was just really happy and proud that I said, okay, I wanted to do it, and now I'm doing it. It's very nice, very nice.
Yeah, no, sometimes it is surreal when you have this kind of this dream, and then it's all of a sudden happy, and like I'm actually doing this thing. I really thought, you know, I talked about it, but I never knew if it actually happened. Were you riding in Germany during the floods that happened as well?
I was. The last week was the worst. The last week in Germany was the worst, you know, part of the floods. But I was very far up. Up by the Alps. I don't know if that's north or that's south, right? Southern Germany. The floods weren't as bad there as other places in Germany, but I experienced some roads being flooded, some bike paths. There was one place where I like had to lift it, and it was much deeper than I expected because it was like by a tunnel. So I was pulling up my bike. Yeah, it was really deep. So my bike like turned into a raft, just floating on the panniers.
those tunnels are the worst. I've actually had that happen to me as well, where you think, oh, it doesn't look that bad. You don't realize how deep it goes. And then all of a sudden you've got like your shins are in water and you're like, oh, shoot, what have I done?
Yeah, it's definitely a funny moment on the trip.
So, you know, you spend all this time on your bike. What was the hardest part? You know, were there times you thought, oh, I've got to stop. I'm just going to go home. This sucks. Or were there other things that were just, you know, for you really difficult?
The hardest part, the floods weren't dangerous, but they were still really annoying. So there were days when it was just raining all day and I really just, it totally killed my mood. And I was really struggling to go on. Some days I'd like be in shelter for most of the day because it was just constant. And even though most of my stuff was waterproof, it was just really not fun riding in rain all day, freezing, and your feet are wet like constantly.
Yeah, I'd say riding in rain is, you know, everything. You can go hiking or backpacking in rain. You can go ski touring in snow. You know, there's lots of stuff, but rain and, you know, being on a bike for 8 hours is just horrible. I always find my fingers get really cold. I have like little neoprene, like scuba diving gloves I bring if I know it's going to rain. But even then, like everything is wet and clammy. So I'm impressed you rode those days because I always try and find a way to do like a really short day when it's raining. But you probably had like a week straight of rain, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I rode in the rain. It was just a really big mood killer most of the time.
Here, I was like, this sucks. Let's stop. Let's get a hotel. And let's just like take a rest day. Even if the last day was raining, the same thing. Looking back at your trip, was there any piece of gear that you're like, man, this was incredible? Or on the flip side, is there any piece of gear you're like, man, I really screwed up with this. I wish I had a different bike. I wish I had a different saddle, you know, something like that, that, you know, lesson learned after almost 5,000 kilometers riding across Europe.
Well, my phone was great. You know, my phone, I had my GPS there and I watch movies when I was laying in my tent at night. That was wonderful. But I guess that's obvious, I guess.
I don't know if it is obvious. Like with my kids, when I take them backpacking, if I download a good movie, that's going to keep them going for a few days, just knowing they'll get, you know, an hour of a good movie. And it is nice. Like it's kind of reassuring. It takes your mind off. So I'm a big believer. Take a spare battery. Make sure your phone's charged up because it can do. You can take photos. You can watch videos. You can listen to music to improve your mood. So I think it's obvious, but I don't think, you know, some people may not realize how powerful it can be to improve your mood or just, you know, pass through time, especially if you're random camping in the middle of nowhere. Watching a movie is probably pretty nice as opposed to just sitting there looking at the top of your tent.
Yeah, it can definitely lift the mood if you've had a really shitty day in rain.
And is there any gear where, like, you know, with your bike or anything where you said, oh, you know, I bought the wrong the wrong tent or the sleeping mat, or did everything kind of work out that way?
I started off riding with my sleeping bag and tent in like a big garbage plastic bag. That wasn't most of the time waterproof because it got worn down pretty quick. But it was also just, it was a really bad decision to bring that. So right around like halfway up Germany, I got an extra set of panniers on the front where I'd store my tent and my sleeping bag, and that just made everything so much better. So that was really nice having those. But most of my gear, I felt like I packed most of the stuff I needed. I bought a cooking stove right before I left, and I was not sure if I was going to be using it because I'd read a lot about people saying it's not necessary, but I used it a lot, cooking pasta, and oatmeal.
You did such an interesting approach. A lot of people, they do bike touring, they're staying in campgrounds, they're staying in hotels. They have a plan. Your approach is totally different, which I think is really liberating. You didn't have to do anything. This wasn't trying to complete a route. You just kind of took this off. I just want to go ride my bike for a long time. I'd like to get to Italy, but you hadn't worked out your route ahead of time. You were kind of just riding until a certain time, so you didn't have a destination even each day, which is kind of a different approach from a lot of people. And so I think it's interesting, that approach. I think there's lots of benefits to it. And so just interested, advice for people that may want to look at that approach, things you've learned where you say, hey, this, I wish I'd known this, or hey, here's some really good information if you're thinking about doing a big trip.
My approach, it was different. Most of the people I met, they planned their destination, at the beginning of the day. They knew where they were going to go. And I think there's definitely, there's good and bad things about both ways. I just really like the freedom of not really, you don't know what's going to happen. I guess that's stressful also for some. I guess also me too. It was, maybe I didn't do that because, maybe I was just lazy. I don't know.
I think that's a good way, not knowing what will happen. One thing I noticed is, through YouTube and social media, we kind of know everything before we go on trips. If I think back 20 years ago, we had a guidebook and you might get, in a 300-page guidebook, get 20 photos. So if you're going to go to India, those 20 photos didn't tell you very much about what you're going to see in India. If you're going to do the bike tour, there was 20 photos. Whereas now with so much social media, you kind of see everything before you do it. What I hear from your approach is you kind of didn't know what was around the next corner necessarily. It was a lot more about kind of exploring and discovery as opposed to most conventional trips where it's like, I'm going to stay day one here, day two there. The trails you're going to go on, the hotels, you may have even made hotel reservations. That it was kind of like more for you, the challenge of trying to be open to all these new experiences, these new places. Which is kind of like an older way of exploring. You're going through a very popular trafficked area, but still find a way to explore it kind of like, somebody would have a few hundred years ago before, it was so widely known. So I think that's a really interesting approach because, we don't have that very often in our lives that we're truly surprised about what we're going to see.
Definitely. It's really intense, doing it like that, I guess. Just you're very conscious of everything when you're just, suddenly you're in a new city, or it's just everything's new. And it's a wonderful way of living, I guess. Talking to Peter, just imagining doing that for 3 years, it's just really beautiful, I think.
I got into bike touring similar to Peter. I was working in London, England, and I read a book by Alistair Humphreys, who spent about 5 years riding around the world in the late 90s, doing similar thing, just sleeping wherever he was. And it was really inspiring. And I think There's probably a lot of people listening to this podcast thinking this is nuts, like to not know where you're going to go to sleep, kind of wherever you are at 5 o'clock at night. But it is a really liberating way to explore. And so you mentioned Peter. My question is, what's next? Are you going to do a bigger journey next? Are you tired of bike trips? Or have you even started to think about, you know, your next great trip?
I'm almost like 100% certain I'm going to do a big trip again. It's just the matter of how big for me. You know, I could see myself doing like a really long trip, I guess. But I don't know if I, you know, I'm going to live life like I, you know, lived my trip. I'm going to see what I want to do tomorrow, and then I'm going to do that. So maybe I don't want to ride my bike in a year when I have time for another trip. And if I do, then I'm going to go. So I don't know what's ahead, but I hope I don't lose interest, because it was a great trip and an awesome adventure.
You know, the one thing about these trips is they're addictive. Once you've done a long trip where you kind of get out of the day-to-day, sometimes when you get back, you're like, oh, that was really tough. I don't know if I want to do another. And then as your memory fades of the bad parts and all you remember the good parts, it's, you know, you go back and do it. If you know, with the way you're talking right now, I can't imagine that you don't do another big trip, or that doesn't become a habit. I always say this is the best addiction a human can have, going on exploring under their own power. It's healthy. It's great for the mental health. And it's just a fun way to kind of grow as a person. So Jens, thanks for sharing this. This is, again, such a novel way to approach this trip. I really liked hearing about your stories, and just hearing about this, like, totally liberating, free way of exploring, just taking it day by day without having a lot of planning. So thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.